Welcome to this episode of Bench Talk, and we're at episode 31, part 2. And I'm really excited about that. I'm excited about the direction of where Bench Talk is going and where I am going, Jackie Mitchell of Jackie Mitchell Career Consulting. You're going to see a lot of changes in the upcoming year and beyond, and my hope is that with each episode, you'll see our pivot and shift to more topics and special guests align with our focus on leadership and professional development. And of course, life. We'll still talk about everything in between as it relates to us as high achievers, leaders, women, top performers, and all around amazing women that we are. Ready? Let's get into it. As a recap, in part one, I talked about the impacts of ineffective leadership, or what some would say bad leadership. And I focused on the phenomenon of quiet quitting. There's a link to part one in the show notes just in case you missed it. Please go back and listen to that episode. It's really interesting. But here in part two, I want to dive into solutions. Previously in part one, I talked about the impact, the problems, the challenges. Part two, right now, we're going to dive into solutions, because what's a problem without a solution? We have to have solutions, or at least recommendations, or rather strong suggestions. Wink, wink. So I want to turn the spotlight on ourselves as leaders. I'm talking directly to my leaders out there who have fallen short of their number one job. In my opinion, the number one job. And that is to help your team members, your direct reports, your employees to be successful. To support them and provide them with the tools and resources they need to do their jobs. To fulfill their obligations and responsibilities. Merely stating what an employee needs to do or direct them to their obligations is not supporting them. Leaving them out there because you believe they, quote unquote, got it, is not supporting them. I have to add something in here. Top performers, key performers, high achievers. I am not talking about teaching them how to do their job. They come into the position with the knowledge and experience that they bring. There are certain tactical things that they have to learn, yes. What I am speaking about, it's not training them on how to do their job. It's not career or professional development. I'm not speaking about that. I am specifically talking about support, supporting them to be successful, providing the tools necessary for them to meet their goals. When I talk about support, leaders providing support, what do you need to do as a leader to help your team members to be successful? So let's dive right in with this, right? Supporting your employees, your direct reports is more than the weekly, bi-weekly, or monthly check-in to see how their job is doing. You have to go beyond that. An effective leader knows how to build a top-tier winning team to drive performance. An ineffective leader does not. And an ineffective leader will argue for their limitations all the time. And they will argue the company's limitations in having top-tier employees. And why they can't have top-tier employees, or why they can't have X amount of top-tier employees. Why? Because they give the excuse of budget and a myriad of other excuses. And I'm sure some of you are even challenging me right now and saying that this is unrealistic to think that your entire team can be a winning team, or that you can afford to have a top-tier team. I can guarantee you it's costing you your credibility. I can almost be certain that it is costing you your direct credibility or your department's credibility with other members of the organization, with other business units, because it starts and stops with you. As someone in a role who can make a change, who can bring about change, who is and should be a change agent, and not pointing to other people to say that change can't happen because it hasn't happened. You've not led the way to change. And sometimes, yes, I will agree or concede that sometimes very small changes are needed prior to the big change. A lot of times, people don't want to hear this. You have to stop the bleeding. You have to rip that Band-Aid and immediately stop the bleeding, because it's costing you more to go with the status quo. It's costing you more to do what you have always been doing. It's costing you more to allow the company to continue to do what they have always been doing. They have fallen into a sense of complacency, but not realizing it, because there's a lot of action, a lot of things happening, but there's no progress. See, now we're going to go into a place that we're going to go there. A lot of action, a lot of moving pieces, a lot of pieces to the puzzle does not mean, nor does it equate or translate to progress. And that is a hard pill to swallow for a lot of people in certain positions. And I think secretly they do know that, but they put on the facade because of the environment that they're in, because of the company culture, to have a lot of activity, a lot of things happening, so many things happening. And me, from a project management standpoint, so many projects going on. But where are we progressing? One, as a company, market share, revenue, and even with the processes that we have in place, are we progressing? Are we progressing to efficiency? Or are we just doing for the sake of doing because we should be doing? It is costing you more to do than to progress. Where do you want to spend your dollars? You either spend them now or you spend them later. And we all know that. You know, great leaders understand that and will make the quote unquote tough decisions, quick decisions, rip the Band-Aid and get shit done. You will not be liked, but you will eventually, because it's not going to be immediate, be respected for taking the stance on making the change to have progress. Now, I'm not saying that every leader is a martyr, nor should you strive to be a martyr, but you want to look at, not but, you want to look at your style, what you contribute, what you know you can contribute, and are you being supported even as a leader? Are you yourself being supported in making change the way that you need to make change for progress? So now that you can be effective, you can have an impact, you can have the influence to make change. That is what an effective leader does. So it all goes together. Leaders, you are here to support your direct reports in being successful. Leaders need to be successful, to stay in those roles. And they themselves need the support to do that. They need to be in an environment to do that. As a whole, the organization should create an environment. That culture should be there. If not, slowly change into that culture, move into that culture, pivot into that culture, where change not only is inevitable, is welcomed for progress with your people. Because once you start there, then you'll see, oh wow, our products are better quality. Our service is better quality. Our customers are happier. our clients are happier because of the culture that we've created within our organization. Because you cannot produce quality in an environment that is dysfunctional. I will challenge anyone on that. You cannot produce quality in a dysfunctional environment. And if you say yes, I will ask you, how do you define quality? It may just be subjective. A quality service, a quality product is created by quality people, quality processes, quality tools, quality resources, quality machines. See, I come from a project management background. You know, what's a successful project? Is that one that delivers on time, but your team is totally burnt out and miserable? I say no, that's not successful. That is not successful. You may have a new service, you provided a new service or new product, but look at your team. Look at the people that had to work on that. They're burnt out. So guess what? Mistakes were made. Long hours were burnt. I'm sure arguments were had. Resentment built. Can you truly produce a quality product or service in that environment? Was that successful? I say no, because the environment is not conducive to people performing at their best. They will do just enough. They will do just enough, and you will get just enough. So you got to look at the data. It will always go back to the data. I want to take you to a different place. I want to talk about, you know, winning teams. You know, I definitely want to talk about winning teams. That's what we've been talking about, really. You know, the environment, the culture. It's made up of the people. You know, I said this in part one, a people company. So I'm not a sports fanatic, nor do I know the ins and outs of sports. But I do know some generalities, if that's the word, right? Some general things. So let's say, and I've noticed this in watching just different things. So when a sports team owner is unhappy with the direction of their company, i.e. their franchise, they'll look at the data, the wins, the losses, the players, their stats, and key people in key roles, i.e. the head coach, right? When a franchise is on a losing streak, what does an owner typically do? They will either begin trading players, bringing in top-tier players, or they'll replace the coach, the leader. Owners want a winning team for their organization or their franchise. They want top-tier coaches, top performers. They want someone to come in and turn around their losses. They want someone to come in and motivate, inspire, support, and help their teams to be successful. They want a coach to coach the players to wins, to success. They provide the support and resources for their coaches to do this. That's their number one job to the organization. The coaches as well provide the support and resources for their players to be successful. That's their number one job to the organization. So if we bring it back to the business world, corporate, why aren't we doing this on a much broader scale? Why aren't we replacing leaders who are falling short and failing their people? And I'm speaking at all levels of the organization, even flat organizations, if they even still exist. There still is a hierarchy, but they just don't admit it. Where are we falling short? What is our data telling us? And are we ready and willing to stop the bleeding? And I'm not suggesting firing everyone and starting from scratch. I'm not living in this utopia world. I know it's not feasible. That is not feasible. What I am suggesting is putting in guardrails, putting objectives, values, goalposts in place that help an organization grow from the inside out, meaning growth with and by your people. I can almost guarantee you that those in key positions, key leadership positions, are not tasked with ensuring that they are effective with their people. Their performance reviews won't include employee ratings of them. Typically, they won't. They'll have objectives that hit directly the bottom line, the department objectives and mission, rolling up to the company's objective and mission and roadmap. Rarely will you find the data on popular opinion. And you're probably like, why do we need data on popular opinion? Because the data will tell the story. You will get a 360. A lot of times we're doing 180s, maybe even 90. Rarely will you have those in high positions questioning the turnover in any given department. Why? Because it can be explained away by factors other than the leadership skill and style. A leader is most times assessed by how much they're bringing in, how many high-paying customers do they have and that they nourish. Where's the data or objectives on developing your team, advancing your team, or even data on how many team members have received promotions? And I'm not talking about salary increases. I'm talking about promotions and advancement as recognition for being top performers, ready to take on new responsibilities. Where's the data to support that? How is that data being used to assess the performance of an effective leader? So I want to go into the recommendations. Here's my recommendations for effective leadership performance. Authentically connect with your people. Build trust. Demonstrate worthiness. Do that whole know, like, and trust factor. Bring that into your personal branding. Number two, review your performance through the lens of your team. Not easy to do, but it should be done. Number three, get curious. Start asking questions and put yourself in the center of those questions. What am I doing? How can I help this? How can I support this? How can I help this or this team, these people, my people, to be successful? Number four, find out how you can be more of service. Goes along with number three. Number five, fail fast and fail early. Number six, fix what's broken. Do not ignore problems. Typically, your team will come to you with a problem. Typically, your team has the solution. A lot of times, they do not feel empowered to state a suggestion. Help them to feel empowered in voicing their concerns and their recommendations. Number seven, know what others say about you when you've left the room. And you're probably like, I don't care what people think about me. Well, you should. How will I know what people are saying about me? Ask the question. It's simple to do. It may not be easy, but it's a simple thing to do. Number eight, always ask the question, am I helping my team to be successful? And if you don't know what they need, ask them. And number nine, understand your values. This one was going to be the first, but I decided to list this one last. Here's why. When you understand your work values and recognize how it relates to your organizations, there will be little to no resistance in doing your job. The problem is that as a leader and even as an employee, if you don't understand your value system as it relates to the work that you do, that's where you find a lot of frustration in getting things done, in the ability to get things done, in the ability to be a change agent. Are you even being supported? Let's look at you like we talked about earlier. Let's look at you as a leader. Are you empowered to make change? Or are you fearful of change because it's always been done this way? Are you fearful of what people or the organization may think of you, how they will receive you? And of course, there's a way to get things done. There's a way to approach. There is a process. Absolutely. But are you understanding what your core work values are and how they align with the culture that you're in? That is the root of a lot of the issue. And I know leadership is not an easy undertaking. I understand that and know it firsthand. And depending on where you are in the organization, your role will require different things. The common factor in all of this is how effective you are in supporting your team's success. Thank you for listening to this episode. Please subscribe, download, and share with your friends and colleagues. So I have something for you. For more actionable steps and real-world solutions on developing as an authentic leader that everyone will want to work with, I want you to download our premium masterclass, Authentic Leadership. The link will be in the show notes. And as a bonus to that masterclass, you will get a worksheet on finding and identifying your work values. Because without that, you're not going to fully understand, am I aligning here? How am I making decisions? Are the decisions that I'm making mutually beneficial for me and the organization? Should I be here? Does this align with my leadership style? What is my leadership style? For more actionable steps and real-world solutions on developing as an authentic leader that everyone will want to work with, download our premium masterclass, Authentic Leadership, today. The link will be in the show notes below. Thank you guys for listening to this episode of Bench Talk.